that felt good, didn't it? Didn't it?
Nice win.
Did it change anything for you?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, because, I mean, they got a win on the road in a game that most people, including myself, maybe you as well, didn't think that they were going to win.
It was an eyebrow raiser.
It was nice.
Yeah.
But to me, it just kind of cements who they are in a nutshell. You look at a four-game road trip, and they went 2-2 with one really, really bad loss and one really nice win. And you beat Minnesota without Draymond and Kuminga and a couple of others in the end of a road trip in a game where, let's be fair about it, Minnesota didn't show up until the six-minute mark of the first quarter.
Well,
they were flat. They were listless. They had five turnovers in the first 5 minutes. Now, how many of those were generated by Warriors defense? Maybe a little bit. The Warriors came out, and they were the aggressor. They took it to them, and they built up a big lead. And as you mentioned, when you're up by 20 in the first quarter, it does not necessarily mean that you're always going to win or you're always going to blow the team out. And so the Warriors survived Minnesota's late rally. You know, I like horse racing, and it was a little bit like seeing a horse turn for home with a five-length lead, and you're thinking, all right, this one, and then here comes the eight horse on the outside, and you get all the way down to the wire, and you win by a nose, and it's like, whew, another couple of strides, and they lose that race.
Maybe you're probably right. I thought the whole night, I'm like, they're probably still going to lose. They're up by 20. I'm like, probably still going to lose. Probably. They'll probably find a way to lose. I know that Ant's going to get hot. They're going to make their run, all that stuff. Minnesota's tough. They're at home. That's how the NBA works. It's why both of those teams lead the league in clutch games. Like, I felt the whole time like that was going to get close at the end. It did. Warriors have a little bit of a bugaboo in that spot. They pulled it out. Good for them. Sometimes we do overanalyze these things, though. Was Minnesota flat? Were the Warriors good? Did they have that dog in them? You want to know what they did last night? Some of their shots went in. That's really it. That's it. They shot 50% from three. 50% from three.
You should win when you do that.
Buddy Hield had basketballs that came out of his hands that went in the hoop.
Nice.
That changes things. Guess what they did from the free throw line? They shot the ball, and it went in. That's the only thing that changed.
Well, and when it didn't go in, and when GP2 missed the second of two, and Kevon slithered in and jumped his usual 3 inches off the floor and poop, tipped that thing back out, Warriors kept possession, and they had to foul again. So even when they missed a free throw, to your point, they were able to scramble and get an offensive rebound, keep possession, and avoid disaster.
I think both times. They only missed three free throws in the game. If memory serves, Wiggins missed both ends of a free throw trip. This was with many, many minutes still to go. And I think that the Warriors got the rebound and did something with it. And then obviously the GP2 one at the very end that Wiggins grabs the offensive rebound. Yep. And that turns into two more Steph free throws and the end of the game.
Kevon with the great tap out on
absolutely.
What he does at 6'9", without really much of a vertical leap, and not to disrespect Kevon as an athlete because he's a pro basketball player, but the way he's able to do what he does without really getting that far off the ground, he's amazing. And that was an uncanny, athletically smart play where he just kind of does his Kevon thing and then swoop, just tips it back out to Wiggins, and then you win the game.
Just a fascinating night, not only because the Warriors won, but you think about everything that's been said on this radio station all week long about how it almost felt like a coordinated effort by Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, and Draymond Green to let the fans know that we're probably not going to win and we're probably not going to make a big trade. And whether those were the actual words out of their mouths, that's how a lot of people were feeling. And at minimum, that was the discussion point. I know I never thought it was a white flag. I don't think you really thought it was a white flag. But it was something. It was something what was being said. And it was very, very clear on their minds last night that they wanted to say something a little bit different. Again, here is Steph Curry on ESPN after the game.
All the Twitter fingers who's got deals that we need to make can kind of just shut up a little bit and let us figure this thing out. Like, we know we can be competitive. We showed, you know, that toughness tonight. Obviously, every team is trying to find ways to get better. And for us, we've been great for a very long time. This is just a unique year where we have to be able to stay relevant and give ourselves a chance and just have some life in a playoff series. And we have a whole lot of confidence that we can, you know, beat anybody. So, yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
That's
it. Did everybody hear that? And there was more, Dibs. That was on national TV.
Just on that, just that piece that hits me as I've listened to it now for the fifth time, what he said about stay relevant and be competitive in a playoff series. That, to me, speaks to everything that they're thinking about as far as what this season is. Stay relevant. Right now, 20-20 is a 10 seed. You're relevant. You're staying relevant at 20-20. We're almost exactly halfway through the season, and they're not great. They're not terrible. They are relevant. So stay relevant and then be competitive in a playoff series.
Yeah,
that is where they're setting the bar.
Of course. They're two games out of the 6th seed.
Right?
Like,
and they're also one game out of the 12 seed.
I mean,
or a half game,
right?
Rather.
But you say stay relevant. What if I change the word? Stay present. Just that's my thing.
Yeah, like, stay present, but you got to stay relevant. You can be present.
No, no, no.
But,
I mean, for us,
yeah.
Stay here. Stay here. It's January 16th, and they won last night.
You tell me to put away my Twitter fingers.
Well, you usually do.
Well, I got the
you put away everybody else's Twitter fingers.
I
you
got
just
the
block
trade
everybody.
Machine. Nope. Well, yeah.
No, but how?
A lot of mutes.
I'm not telling you not to have fun on the internet.
Yep.
I think that's what the internet's largely doing there.
Especially that beautiful trade machine.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Does anybody have to look over at their significant other at night? They're like, what are you looking at? I'm sorry, I had the trade machine open
exactly.
again.
Exactly.
Yeah, go have fun and shop.
Are you looking at naked girls again? No, honey, it's the trade machine.
No, it's the trade machine. The Warriors and Raptors are going to have a hard time figuring this out. I mean, just stay in the moment. You can have fun. I'm not telling anybody not to come up with a mock deal. We've all done it. But as far as this need to make them define who they're going to be, a trade team or not a trade team? Why do we have, that's my question today. What is that? Why do we have this need for them to declare? Grandy, I think you might even be one of these people based on the conversations we've had today. It feels to me like there are Warrior fans who have this need for the team to declare. As in, there's three choices. We're all in on Steph this year. We're all out on mortgaging the future, or there's team wait and see. And I have to be on team wait and see because there's going to be new information every day, new deals every day, new contractual situations, new realities, new winning streaks, new losing streaks. I don't know, man. We're not there yet. We're not there yet.
We've been on team wait and see for 2.5 years, and all we've learned is that they're not good enough, and they're only getting worse.
But
I don't know how you can keep saying, oh, well, we hope when the offseason comes along, maybe this is the year that Giannis is going to be available.
I'm not even talking about the offseason. I'm talking about 3 weeks from today. Like, do you know what I mean? I don't want to hear them say we're definitely making a deal. Not if it's a bad one. Not if it, like, don't do a deal just to do a deal. I hear a lot of people do anything for Steph. I might even agree with you. But what if that deal that you're making for Steph makes them worse? I argued this 2 weeks ago. Just from a salary standpoint, Jimmy Butler, right? Let's talk Jimmy Butler for a second. From a salary standpoint, that would be Wiggins and Kuminga. I don't think that makes you better. The concept is you're helping Steph. I think you're hurting Steph. So that's all. I don't understand this need to make the Warriors tell us exactly what they're going to do. You have to take every day and every deal on its own merits.
And then you have to take every result on its own merits, and you still have, I think, 7 or maybe even 8 games until the actual deadline. So if you're 20-28 or 28-20 or somewhere in between, that all will inform your course of action. Because if you happen to go on a little bit of a heater with this cast of characters and you find yourself in the 6 or 7 seed, you might be more motivated to make a move thinking, okay, we're starting to hum. We might be one player away. So now we can really look at the deadline and think about adding a piece that can get us from a 6 seed to the 3 or the 4 seed. And conversely, if you go on another skid and you find yourself in the 12 seed and you are I don't know, 24 and 28 over the next 12 games, that might inform you the other way.
Totally, totally. And even if there's the record side of it, and then there's also just the availability, the financials, all of those things, that to me, you take each and every one on their own merits. Like, that's Mike Dunleavy's job. And I am in the camp that Mike Dunleavy, based on a very short period of time here as the GM, has done some pretty interesting things. I like Mike Dunleavy as the GM. Not everything is perfect. I think he was kind of stuck in the whole Jordan Poole situation. I think the Jordan Poole situation was about money more than people realize. It was about not just like, who's better, Jordan Poole, Chris Paul, trade exceptions, what are we going to do here? It was about, do we want to be paying that to Jordan Poole for the next 5 years, while we're also wanting to extend Steph, extend Draymond, and be ready for Jonathan Kuminga? That deal was more about flexibility. And there was the whole emotional side that was hanging over the organization, which is Draymond's fault, largely. But, you know, all of those things come into play when you figure out what to do next. So I'm just not going to, I as a fan don't want to pigeonhole the Warriors into you must do this.
Right.
You must make a deal or you must not make a deal. I don't know.
Well, you got 10 games, and I do think that they're still trying to decide who they are. And it's interesting the way Steph put it last night, to tell everyone to just kind of back up a little bit and let us figure this out. And, you know, maybe the Warriors can figure it out, because Buddy had a good game last night, and Dennis Schroeder played a lot closer to the Schroeder that you thought that he was going to be. He was getting the ball and going downhill. He was attacking the basket, and Buddy was shooting with confidence, and your younger pieces all came in and contributed. So if that's the team that you really are closely resembling, and Kuminga comes back and Draymond comes back, well, now maybe you don't have to necessarily make a big move at the deadline, because that team last night looked more like the 12-3 team than the team that lost 17-24.